I'm Vance Rabius. I'm a senior scientist at the American Cancer Society, and I want to talk to you this afternoon about how the way people feel when they call a quit line affects can impact the effectiveness of it. I'd like to take a moment and acknowledge my co-authors on the presentation, particularly Pamela Vilars, who was instrumental in developing the intervention I'm going to mainly be focusing on today, Joanne Pike, the former Quitline director, Alfred McAllister, a scientific consultant from the University of Texas Health Science Center, and Don Wyattrick, the current Quitline director. By way of background, the American Cancer Society Smokers Quitline is an evidence-based proactive telephone counseling service. It began in 2000 as a clinical trial. The Cancer Society wanted to test whether or not it was effective, cost-effective, fit into their infrastructure. They decided they liked the way it worked and wanted to make it part of what they do in their fight against cancer. So last year, in the first year, we served about 2,000 people. Last year, we served over 70,000, so it's growing pretty rapidly. Unlike all the rest of the Cancer Society, it's not funded by donations. It's funded by service contracts with state health departments and corporations, and currently we have contracts with 13 state health departments to provide the service free of charge to residents of the states, and with over 80 corporations now to provide it free to employees of the corporations. I'm going to be talking about a line of research that we've developed over the last 7 years. I use the term depression here very loosely. I'm not referring to a clinical diagnosis of depression. I'm referring to self-report at baseline based on a single item. Have you felt sad or blue every day for the last 2 weeks? So what we're really talking about is current depressive mood, but that takes longer to say, and so we use depression as a shorthand, but please keep in mind we know we're using the term loosely. What we have found over the course of a number of clinical trials is that an unexpectedly high proportion of callers say yes to that question. So earlier when someone alluded to the fact that smokers might be unhappy, in fact they are, more so than we thought they were anyway, and that this group has a more difficult time quitting. In our first clinical trial in 2000, we found that 37% of the people who called us said they felt sad or blue every day for the last 2 weeks. And that was about twice what we were expecting. Among the normal population, we'd expect 8 to 10% of the people to say yes to that question, and among smokers, we'd expect about twice that. And so among quitline callers, we were seeing twice the rate we would expect among the smoking community. And we saw that they had significantly lower quit rates than people who said no to the question, but that they significantly benefited from counseling, from giving access to counseling. There's going to be a lot more information on the slides than I'm going to get to in this time frame, but I decided to leave them in so that you could refer to them later. There's also citations there that you can go find out more about the background studies. I will point out that they don't discuss depression or this depression marker. We haven't published anything on that yet because we were still thinking about it, but you can find out the main findings of the other studies in the service study design from the references. In the second clinical trial, where we were varying the number and the length of counseling sessions and also giving people access to relapse prevention sessions at the end of regular counseling or not. Here we found that 46% of the people said yes to the sad or blue question, and we found that again they had significantly lower quit rates overall, but they benefited from access to relapse prevention sessions if they were given access to short counseling sessions, like 50 minutes total counseling time, and they also conversely would benefit from access to longer counseling protocols. So either access to a longer duration of counseling access or a longer time spent with them during sessions. Both those things proved to be effective. We did a large-scale internet trial a couple years back, and we looked at this there. There we found that 30% of the people said yes to the sad or blue, and we found that they had lower quit rates, but that they did not benefit from access to tailored interactive websites, that they did just as well with a targeted static site where they could just read and download cessation materials. Now, that brings us to the current research that I'm really talking about today. We'd identified this group. We see that they have a difficult time smoking, a difficult time quitting smoking, and we wanted to see if there was something we could do in the telephone counseling experience that would benefit them. So we decided to try to enhance our telephone counseling protocol with brief cognitive therapy for depression and enhanced social support features. And so we randomized people to have access to either a standard protocol or this enhanced protocol, and then with or without access to boosters, which are relapse prevention sessions 1 and 2 months after the end of regular counseling. And we got a couple thousand people in the study. Now, we realized that we were not experts in depression, and so we went looking for some help in designing this intervention and training our counselors, and we partnered with the Beck Institute for Cognitive Therapy and Research because they were our experts in it. A brief overview of the protocol development, the way we went about it. We collaborated with the Beck Institute both in reviewing our smoking cessation protocols and possible depression interventions. We worked together to identify the primary strategies we wanted to use and how to integrate those into our existing protocol. We developed supplementary materials, and then we brought the Beck Institute people to the National Cancer Information Center to train the telephone counselors and then help us develop a program for continuing education and ongoing training. This slide is to give you a little bit of a feel for the way the counseling experience is structured. It pivots around a quit date. The first counseling session is 10 to 14 days before the quit date. In that session, the client sets the quit date. The second session is scheduled to be a couple days before the quit date. The third counseling session is scheduled at that time also to be the day after. The fourth and fifth sessions come when the fourth comes a week after the third, and the fifth session, if there is one, comes a week after the fourth. In this particular study, the standard protocol was a four-session protocol. There was no fifth session, and the enhanced protocol had five sessions. I'll run again when we were developing the intervention, our key factors, the main things we were concentrating on was to maintain all components of the successful cessation protocol that we currently used, and then we had to identify the primary strategies that we were going to use. And we decided to characterize this as a stress intervention rather than a depression intervention or a mood intervention, because everything that we're working, all these strategies that we're using are also good for stress. Stress is something everyone who's quitting feels, and not everyone who calls us has this depressive marker. So, and we weren't segregating people into intervention groups based on whether or not they felt sad or blue. So we also had to increase the length of the sessions to accommodate the enhanced intervention. And we had, as I said, we had to bring the Beck Institute in to train our counselors. And we developed supplementary materials that were easy to read. Now, the next few slides are, this one talks a little bit about the supplementary materials, and then the next slides are just of those materials. And I'm just going to page through them. You can go back in the, because of the time limits of the presentation, you can go back through them and look at them at your leisure later. And just again to touch on the counselor training, we had on-site training from the Beck Institute, and they trained the counselors to deliver the intervention and then helped us develop the continuing education piece. So what happened? we found that 48% of the people said yes, they were sad and blue when they called, the highest rate we had seen. And that this group had lower quit rates, as we had found before. However, we found no evidence in the short-term follow-up that this group benefited from access to the enhanced protocol or the booster sessions. We were disappointed that the enhanced protocol didn't help them, didn't do anything to their smoking quit rates. We weren't too surprised about the booster sessions because both of these were longer protocols, and in previous research we had not seen where we see the benefit with the booster sessions. Those relapse prevention sessions, 1 and 2 months out, is with protocols of shorter duration, and this was the standard protocol was over 100 minutes here, and the enhanced protocol was over 200 minutes of counseling time. This is also kind of consistent with what I've been seeing at various meetings over the last couple of years on comorbidity and smoking cessation. When you're dealing with these kind of light interventions like telephone counseling or internet-based interventions, it doesn't seem to be effective as far as reducing smoking rates to try to address comorbidities in those settings. I haven't seen a lot of evidence of that, and you know, we gave this a pretty good shot here, and it didn't work for us. Now, you know, we may have done something. We haven't looked at all the data yet. We may have done something to affect the people's mood, but that isn't what we were after. I mean, at the Cancer Society, our mission is to reduce smoking rates, and so we're not interested in stepping beyond that into treating mood disorders. We were interested in that as an adjunct to lowering smoking rates. So it's kind of our feeling that we should perhaps leave the therapy to therapists, that the crack we have at people is not enough to try to address a comorbidity like this. We'd love to be proved wrong. This is the effect of, you know, one study, but that's what we found, and that's what I've got for you today. There's contact information at the next to the last slide, and the last slide has citations that were used in those background studies. And thank you.